Okay, we're recording.
All right, very good. Today is July 18th, and we are going to be speaking about Ghana and focusing on the elections that took place in Ghana in November of 1992. It's going to take a few sessions to cover all the things that need to be discussed. So on this occasion, I'm going to go over some of the major issues and developments. And then in a few more sessions, we could go even more deeply into them because, you know, this accounting has not been done. At least it has not been done by myself. And since I was the person responsible for the Carter Center election monitoring and a lot of the both pre-election and post-election work, therefore, you know, my contributions and my notes are very important to understanding what transpired. All right, so a couple of, you know, overarching themes. You know, the first one is the great challenge of a government that was a military government that had been in power for 11 years, that had ruled largely in a very extra-constitutional manner. That had put in place a lot of repressive legislation, and you know, people had been, opponents had been driven into exile. The government controlled the means of mass communication, television and radio. It had its own military contingent. It had civil defense organizations and formerly the committees for the defense of the revolution, which were previously armed, but which was a popular group within the country. The government proceeded with its own political organization, and this was conducted under a national commission for democracy, what its name, headed by a Justice Annan. It had conducted elections for district assemblies and then district councils based on electoral and voting registers that it had drawn up. And so Ghana was entering a transitional system in which the government was seen as very arrogant, a government that was very dismissive of the opposition demands, and one that gave ground, you know, very reluctantly. And so you had a constitution being drafted, you had a constitutional assembly meeting, a referendum that voted overwhelmingly for the election. With regard to the electoral commission appointed by the government and with a lot of procedures in place that derived from these very managed forms of of political inclusion that did not meet any minimal standards of democracy or democratization. And the opposition made a lot of demands during that period for a new voter register, for ways of being able to identify voters on a much stricter basis and so on. A whole raft of demands. And the government, in fact, gave way on some of them, but overwhelmingly maintained the system in place. So entering the elections, on which the opposition really was given a choice, either take part in the presidential election, and by the way, one of the early demands was for a separation of the presidential and parliamentary vote. The government was able to insist on having the presidential election taking place first. But the reports on the election, which I've been able to review, really highlight just a very, very large number of irregularities that took place. The intimidation continued throughout the voting process. There were many reports, especially in the rural areas, of intimidation. The rhetoric of the government tended to be much harsher when it was away from the spotlight of the media and international organizations in Accra. But the overwhelming evidence from the elections is that, and this is the term that we arrived at, and when I say we, I'm referring to the monitoring organizations, which on the earlier occasions I mentioned, you know, included the Commonwealth, included the Organization of African Unity. And there might have been an European Union mission. I'll double-check that one. But anyway, we arrived at the term, you know, flawed, that there were flaws in the election, that there were, you know, irregularities, but that these flaws and irregularities were not sufficient to invalidate the results of the elections, the official results. Now, that's a very critical point because, and in fact, one of my notes here pointed out that Ghana, leading up to the 1992 elections, that the government, that the country had a good growth record. There had been a turnaround because of the change in economic strategy, but that Ghana was not attracting a lot of foreign investment. And again, having to do with the nature regime and the fact of the many years of the Rawlings, you know, putting forward a very, you know, radical posture and a very, you know, anti-capitalist, anti-private investment posture, and putting forward itself as being, you know, somewhat of a quasi, let us say, socialist organization, or at least a radical populist organization. So, for the government, its aims was, of course, to be able to retain power. Secondly, to have the opposition participate in the elections, therefore having the elections appear as a credible process. But thirdly, and very critically, having the international organizations give, as it were, a stamp of approval to the elections. All right, so I'll relate one particular episode. It's not in the notes here, but I'll relate one particular episode. And this was following the elections, because as I mentioned, there were just a lot of discussions taking place to try and keep the opposition on board, to try and lower the temperature. There was a lot of tension at the time. The opposition was thinking of a real mobilization against the government, but of course, there would have been a great risk if it were to proceed on that course, just given the nature of the regime and the fact that it had complete control of the method, the means of coercion in society. So our aim was to allow the criticisms to be heard, but also to emphasize that the process must continue. And this, of course, turned out to be an extremely difficult line to move forward, just given the fact that the regime remained as arrogant as ever, as dismissive of ever, very unwilling to even meet the its critics partway, and on the part of the opposition, there was a feeling of that those who had made the decision to go ahead with this election, there was a feeling that they had made a mistake, because all of the deficiencies that were revealed by the elections were deficiencies that had been identified from before. But anyway, I just want to mention one episode, and this episode was where in the hotel where we we had rooms and we had our offices. It's called the Labadi Beach Hotel. And I was being interviewed by a number of journalists, media companies, about the elections, and asking me about what was speaking for the Carter Center. And I said all the things I was saying all along, that this was a major step forward, and that there were irregularities, but we still felt that they were not of a nature, and this wording we worked very hard to come up with, were not of an extent to invalidate the results of the elections. And of course, as you're aware, the opposition came forward with a much stronger position, calling stolen victory. Well, it turned out that I happened to see the television broadcast before I was leaving. I was on the verge of leaving Ghana, but I happened to see the television broadcast, and the broadcast had me speaking and saying that here is Professor Richard Joseph of the Carter Center, etc., etc., director of the election mission and all the rest. But then it proceeded to say what I said, but without me speaking. So it was just showing. And it was what it said I was said was not at all what I had said. In fact, it went ahead and, and said, Professor Joseph, on behalf of them, has stated that the elections were free and fair. And, and those particular words, we had avoided using those words in our report because, in fact, they had asked me, now I remember, they had asked me, well, would I say that they were free and fair? And I found a way to avoid using the words. But anyway, so it really shows you, and I, in fact, I was very, very annoyed that, this form of, the form of manipulation that was taking place. And in fact, I remember I had met up with some of the journalists before I even left and explained to them, my real, frustration that in fact, the position that we were making, which was a very nuanced position, was, being, deformed. But again, it had to do with the nature of the control that the Rawlings regime enjoyed. But, you know, I'm going to go a little more deeply into a lot of the, not here, but because there's a lot of material for me to go back and to review about the process. I do want to see and really emphasize that Ghana going from where it was, right up into, well, into the electoral process and the nature of the regime. And, there were changes that were made. There was some of the repressive legislation that had to be altered, had to be removed. There were, people in detention who had to, had to be let out of detention. There was, issues, having to do with amnesty for particular individuals. So it's a whole lot that had to be taken place as a kind of dismantling of this this very repressive state system that had existed for a number of years. And for a country to go through an electoral process under those conditions, just modified sufficiently, but then to go on and make the kind of progress that Ghana has made, I still consider quite an extraordinary experience. So I'll stop here and, just take a few questions from you. If there are any questions that come to your mind provoked in thinking of the process.
You have to give me a second to
That's all right. You can take a second.
Gather
That's
my all thoughts.
Right. I've shared with you, you can see the message that went from me to President Carter in the midst of the process and what we were trying to accomplish. Right. But anyway, anything that comes to your mind?
I guess, can you just speak about that month between the presidential elections in November and the legislative elections in December? What sort of steps did you take as representative of the Carter Center in Ghana?
Okay. Very good. Well, first of all, after the elections, the presidential elections, all the other electoral monitoring organizations had left because, they were just there for those elections. In the case of our organization also, most of the individuals who were part of our delegation had also left. So the only people remaining from the monitoring teams was, during those period, was myself and a small group of associates and who were involved, in this, talking to the opposition parties, talking to the government representatives and trying to, work through that process. All right. So when it became clear that the opposition was, that the government was not going to relent, all right, on the conditions, and I'll have to look back to see some of the specific demands that the opposition were making. Obviously, one of the demands was, yes, was for this election to be nullified because they considered it to be a false, to be an illegitimate process. All right, the government is not prepared to do so. There was, I think, a 21 days when an appeal could go to the Supreme Court, and we can check the details as to whether that was conducted or not. But we did not have any continuing role in the 92 elections, the next phase. We weren't planning to do so. We weren't set up to do so. And obviously the opposition had decided to boycott those elections, and the Rawlings Party, the NDC, and a couple of affiliated parties went ahead, and of course they were able to, win the seats going forward. Our attention really focused on two aspects. One, conflict prevention, right? Keeping the process from deteriorating any further, right? And any, outbreak of mass violence. That was, part of our interventions. And of course, remember, we were very much in contact also with the United States State Department. And so it wasn't just ourselves acting, this whole sort of diplomatic community to which we had, a certain attachment was also involved in that. All right. The second one, and this was an area that really continued for a number of years, more than on the electoral monitoring side, even though we were involved in the 1996 elections. And I did return to Ghana, even though I was no longer at the Carter Center. I did come back for the 96 elections, and I do have a lot of my notes from those 96 elections. But a lot of our attention was focused on the Electoral Commission, right? And getting the Electoral Commission, in many ways, using the experience of the 92 elections as leverage to address some of the really major issues. And as it turns out, Ghana has made enormous progress, and we can talk about that in further detail, but and I would say, for two reasons I'll mention here. One reason was leadership. It's something that keeps coming up in a lot of our discussions, right? Mm-hmm. And I've already mentioned the role that Professor Afari Jan was able to play. He was on the commission. The Ofori Boateng and others, in terms of that, Ofori Boateng was later. But anyway, the other people and the chairman, they were fine people, but Afari Jan, he was a political scientist. He was really committed and, really moved it forward. The second thing was, and in fact, this was confirmed in my recent conversations with Professor Atahiru Jega, who also served as chairman of the Electoral Commission in Nigeria from 2010 to 2015. And this was that in Ghana, and again, we referred to, some aspects of Ghanaian culture, right? That there's a certain harmonizing aspect of Ghanaian culture that we're, transcending a lot of these, especially the ethnic and other sectional kind of identities, but was an approach to election administration that was inclusive, right? That they were able, under Afari Jan's leadership, to create a committee in which the political parties were invited to participate, right, and to be part of that conversation, right. So if you could just imagine a situation where you have this autocratic regime, an autocratic regime where there was a lot of uncertainty, and the regime itself contributed to that uncertainty, which was, basically, you all better vote for us because we may not go. It was not, and there were many different ways in which they, sought to convey that message. But the fact that that during the transition, Ghana was able to install a number of constitutional features and entrench those constitutional features, right? Created the opportunity for a genuinely nonpartisan, independent electoral commission and operation to emerge, even though the regime essentially continued in power, with a few adjustments. But and so this decision to invite the opposition parties, and it took some doing, because remember, these actually opposition parties were very distrustful, and they had the experience of, of considering themselves to have been, as it were, badly burned by the same electoral commission. So have them come in and to take part in the revising of the electoral system, introducing things like, photo ID for voters and a whole number of other things that, we'll be able to take up. So I think that our role, when I look back on it, if I have to look through the whole sweep, because we're talking about Carter Center interventions, I have to say that our role really was positive. I mean, I can't think of anything, you know, in hindsight that I think was negative about, you know, our investment. I think the ability of President Carter to establish his personal relationship with Jerry Rawlings is important, right? I think the importance the regime attached to, I remember this is very early in the day now, you know, just thinking of that time, the importance the regime attached to the Carter Center's involvement, right? Because it brought a certain amount of status to what was going on in Ghana. The fact that the regime, you know, tolerated having somebody like myself playing the role that I did. And we could talk later on because, you know, the regime, it was, you know, they were somewhat distrustful of me. And just where did my sympathies lie? Because clearly, you know, I was not evincing any kind of support for, you know, the kind of regime that they represented. I mean, some of the objectives I supported. But in terms of, you know, this form of governance, I thought that, you know, God, this was not what Ghana deserved. Ghana, you know, was the first African country to become independent, and it needed to return to constitutional lines. So I think all these things put together, you know, I think that, you know, both Ghana was successful and our, you know, our engagement, you know, I think, you know, was positive.
Okay, thank you.
All right, okay. But we'll go deeper because we want to, you know, I want to move on because it's, quite frankly, there is just so much for me to catch up with in terms of the notes. I'll look and see what I, you know, other things that come up because I see I have notes there really going all the way back now, 93, 94, 95. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to, you know, just continue talking both about, you know, this transition, but also in terms of the continuing involvement leading, you know, up to 96. And in fact, I have notes going up to 97. So we should be able to cover, you know, that whole period quite well.
Great. Looking forward to it.
All right. Good one. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.